Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Lisa Arnone, and this is The Positive Mind. Today, we are continuing our series, Psychology for Therapists. I've been listening to Armand for more than 10 years, and when I had the opportunity to meet him, I asked him to teach me about psychology from his point of view. The discussions we had were so interesting and stimulating that I suggested we do it on the air, and Armand said, great. So here we are doing Psychology for Therapists, Part 12. Today's topic is Magical Thinking and the Double Bind.
Thank you, Lisa. Yes, it was through Lisa's curiosity that we started this series, and the response has been very positive. What we do that's different is instead of just teaching you as if you were a lay person learning what we're doing, well, I've been teaching as if you were a professional person who I'm teaching, and it turns out there's no reason not to, because most of you know as much as any professional I know, perhaps more. Today we're talking about one of the very important foundations of thinking. I'll start with the beginning that I believe that all of the mental aberrations, the different things that we go through with our mind, can be a product of two things. You know, it could be nature and it could be nurture. The nature part of it is it could be hormonal, chemical, physical, any number of things. Genes that you've inherited create. They can make you crazy or sane. But then there's nurturance. Then there's what happens when you're growing up. That's your environment, your society, as well as your parents, your relationship with them, your siblings. Today I'm going to address the two issues. Magical thinking, very important, and the double bind theory. Now, the double bind theory was by Gregory Bateson. He came up with this in the 50s, I believe. A fascinating idea, He presented a situation in which many children find themselves. Double bind. There is a truth being spoken. There's a lie being spoken. The child cannot expose the lie for one reason or another. The child cannot leave the field. They can't go anywhere. They can't go and live with other parents. So they have to do something to adapt their mind to stay in the situation. An example of this. A young boy recalls when he went to a ski lodge with his mother. His symptom, by the way, coming in to see me, was he had snowfall in front of his eyes all the time. He had this little delicate snow always falling in front of his eyes. It was like white dots. And people knew it was psychosomatic because everything they checked couldn't be true. So he traced it back to the fact that he was in a ski lodge with his mother after his father and she got divorced. And he's young. He's very young. And he didn't understand where did daddy really go, okay? But he's at this ski lodge with his mother, and his mother is flirting with a ski instructor, or flirting may be the wrong word. They were just making some connection between the two of them, but obviously she was excited about the attention of this other man. And the boy, seeing it, says to his mother, "I want to go outside and play." Now, two things are going on now. The young boy is really seeing that some man other than his father is paying attention to his mother. So he's having some kind of reaction that he doesn't even understand. So he wants to pull mommy away and say, "Let's go outside and play." I want to go outside and play with the other kids. The mother combating, you know, understanding that she wants to be there and not be outside with him, says, you don't want to go out there. It's too cold. It's snowing. And he looks outside, and there was no snow. But then he looks outside the window, and snow starts falling. The symptom actually appeared. And he knew his mother was right. So he stayed in the ski lodge. When we talked about that during a therapy session, he talked about how he felt betrayed and how the feelings about the leaving of his father were never dealt with. And as he cried over the loss of his father, the snow stopped falling in front of his eyes. This is an example of a double bind and the effect that it has. A child is being chained to a radiator by a crazy mother. And the mother is beating the child for having the devil inside him, saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. And so she beats the child. The child doesn't know what to do. My mother loves me. You see, let's go back to the original boy, the boy in the ski lodge. What could he possibly say? My mother is saying it's too cold outside, and it's not really cold outside. So there's really a lie here. Let's expose the lie, but I can't afford to expose the lie. I already lost daddy. What am I going to do, lose mommy as well? So I'll make mommy true. Now think of all of you. Think of how many times you made your parents' lies truthful and what you had to do in your mind to believe them and how often they would tell you something. Like Santa Claus left your presents for you, that you left alone. The tooth fairy is going to come, which you left alone. You were bending your mind. They were bending your mind. Maliciously? Absolutely not. Or absolutely. No, not maliciously. It's what they thought they could do. The victim of a double bind receives contradictory injunctions or emotional messages at different level of communication. For example, love is expressed by word, but detachment by the nonverbal behavior. A child is encouraged to speak freely, but criticized and silenced whenever he or she actually does so. This is a double bind. Now that's the first part of it. The second part of the double bind is you can't expose this. You can't say, hey, look, this doesn't make sense. You want me to talk as freely as I want, but I can't use curse words. You want me to take it, but you want me to do it your way. And what the most important is that it's impossible to leave the field. You can't just walk away. The double bind, according to Bateson, was responsible for most splitting of the human mind. I've seen it myself in working with multiple personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder. A child is being beaten or abused. They can't escape it. They can't get away. How do they leave? They leave by their mind. Their mind detaches. If you can break your mind off and send it somewhere else, and leave your body behind to get the punishment, then you'll survive. And that's called dissociation, when you leave your body behind. These are all incredible tools that the human being has as a way of surviving some of the most difficult things that happened to us in childhood that we don't even understand. Let's move on to other tools that a kid uses. Another one is called magical thinking. Now, magical thinking is where you believe things are possible, that you have the power to do things that are really impossible for you to do. Like, you make me feel bad. Now, how many times do you believe that somebody made you feel guilty, made you feel sad? And how many times do you think you make people feel bad? You see, you can't make people feel anything. You can call me a kangaroo. I'm not going to hop. But where does this idea come from when we're kids? We're convinced by our parents that that we make them feel certain ways. We make them sick. In fact, the example of a child drawing with a crayon on a wall, and the parent comes home and looks at the child's drawing on the crayon on the wall, and the parent says to the child, "Look at what you've done, you've made me sick." And the kid looks and has a crayon in his hand, and he thinks, "My God, this crayon, I could give mommy a headache with this crayon. What power I have. But I don't want to hurt mommy, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to wipe it off." And he grabs a tissue and starts to wipe it off, and he makes a mess. And mommy comes out and says, "Now look at what you've done. You've only made it worse," which gives you this belief that you have a power to influence other people. And then not only if you use this power, you can't undo it. Now, a lot of magical thinkers, we like the word magic. See, we love it. Magic is fantastic, not explained. But magical thinking is responsible for a lot of people and the difficulties that they have in their relationships. You think you make the other person feel a certain way. A person tells you, "You made me feel this way." And you believe it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have with us today our associate, Jonna Valerio, who is our apprentice. And now you're on assignment. You're in what school now?
Adelphi.
Adelphi University, right? Social work program. This is it. Even though you know me, probably now you could have an MD.
I'm so happy to learn from you, Armand, always.
Isn't that fun? MD. I was thinking about, you know, we're going to talk about the buddy system for just a minute. WBAI is asking people to donate, to give them $10 a month or $20 a month that you could sign up for in advance by giving them your credit card number. And they call it the buddy system, and they say this would be great. But I thought, you know, that we would have a better word, like, you know, like a donor was a better word than a buddy. But the buddy is the word that we're using. And so if you call the station at any point and you could actually make these donations, you can actually sign up. You could even do it online. And you could be a permanent supporting member of WBAI, which I think is a nice thing. It's a good message. We're not going to die without you. But we want to make you think we'll die without you. Because if we make you think we'll die without you, then you'll feel responsible. And it's a hard message to sell. We're going to survive or not survive based on our own internal stuff, just like every family survives or doesn't survive based on their internal stuff. And it's not what the kid does that makes a family fall apart or stay together. So double bind is kind of interesting. Magical thinking is kind of interesting. It makes us believe we give each other tremendous pleasure. It makes us think that we are responsible for other people's feelings. It makes us feel important. Makes us feel like we have meaning. What's the problem with it? Why not just leave it alone? What is the problem, Lisa? What do you...
The problem with a double bind would be that you can't, there's no way to win. The problem with magical thinking, I think, is that you come up against reality at some point, or, yeah, that's it, that you would come up against reality and the magic wouldn't be able to sustain you anymore.
Well, you know, going along with that, Lisa, the problem with it is, if you believe that somebody else causes your feelings and you could keep blaming, then you keep blaming. And the reality that you come up against is you can't blame anybody anymore. It's not their fault. That's what I keep showing over and over again in our programming. We'll be taking your calls a little later. However, the relationship double bind is a very interesting thing. Let's talk about that. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. How many times have you heard this? More importantly, how many times have you said it about a situation you were in? That's called a double bind. The feeling that whatever decision you make, you are wrong. Everyone experiences this at some point. Some are more susceptible to it than others. Now, back in the 50s, double bind statements were one characteristic in defining schizophrenic mothers. It would say this is what created schizophrenia. According to that theory, besides being cold and emotionally unavailable, as well as overprotective, the mother would have given a pattern of giving children conflicting messages. Well, not just schizophrenic mothers. Many mothers give children conflicting messages. These messages place the child in a no-win situation and cause confusion and anxiety. Now, although this theory is no longer a prominent explanation of all mental illness, double binds abound in our world and they affect us. These double binds are at once stressful, confusing, anxiety-producing. However, in Buddhist thinking, double bind situations are perceived as beneficial in the search for enlightenment. Let's think about that. The ideal, according to Buddhism, is the double bind. Interesting. Human communication is complex. Getting through life without experiencing a double bind is unlikely. There are many instances where relationships produce a double bind situation. One example is the area of jealousy. Most people do not want a partner consumed by jealousy. At the same time, the individual might wonder why their partner is never jealous. The non-jealous partner may experience a double bind as a result. The non-jealous partner, and I've known many a person who said, I found that she was my perfect mate, she was never jealous, but I went to make her jealous. Another example, which has brought some couples to therapy, is that one's partner expects the other to meet their desires without being told what those desires are. And it's evident when one partner says, I don't want you to do it because I asked you to. I want you to do it because you want to. The expression of feelings is important in a relationship. But in this case, the other partner is put in a double bind. What is it? I want you to know what I need. I want you to know what I feel. I don't want to tell you what I feel. As Elizabeth would say. Okay. At worst, if they don't want to do it, it's considered an indication the love in the relationship isn't strong if they can't do it. So what else is working here? Magical responsibility. Here's magical thinking. You should read my mind. Now, this is the difficulty in people who speak slowly. Remember, we were talking about patterns of speech. If you speak slowly, people try to read your mind. They try to imagine what you're going to say. And they talk in between your speaking slowly, usually getting things wrong, not in the direction. Feeling there is no acceptable course of action as a result of a double bind can contribute to lower self-esteem, feelings of resentment towards your partner. In a classic psychological study, when humans and animals were placed in situations where there seemed to be no correct course of action to remedy the situation, they gave up. Learned helplessness, it's called. Apathy is a dangerous feeling in relationships. Too many have given up trying to please their partners. You just give up. The result of most divorce nowadays, since divorce was made easy, many more men are leaving relationships with wives as they get older. Why? Because when interviewed, they said, I didn't know how to please her. I could never find a way to make her happy. And I'm sure the opposite was true, too. The perception of double binds in a relationship may simply be a communication issue. It may also be sensitivity. Therapy helps with it because the therapist will help sorting it out. But let's look at the Zen attitude towards it. What may be the correct course of action in one situation may call for a very different course of action in a similar situation. A more Zen-like attitude might be the solution. In Zen Buddhistic writing, the double bind is a path to enlightenment. A koan, K-O-A-N, which is the unsolvable problems given to a student by a master, such as, what was your original face before you were born, were to be meditated on until the student presented an appropriate answer. As there is no appropriate answer possible, the goal was for the student to become so frustrated in the quest that the ego relinquishes its hold and the student realizes enlightenment. Koans, according to Zen Buddhism, lead to seeing through the false mind of duality. Now here, think of something that you absolutely believe. Like, I can figure it out. Many of you are sure that if you get the time, I can figure it out. Now here's a test. Imagine that you allow yourself to believe that it's not true. Let it go. You can't figure it out. Now imagine this. Look at the state of mind. The state of mind of I can figure it out, which has compulsive thinking, obsessive thinking. Because you're obsessively thinking because you believe if you think hard enough, you're going to figure it out. Right? How many of you do that all the time? But imagine if we do, you're never going to figure it out. There is no answer. What would happen if you fell through that hole? I can get someone to love me. There's another one for you. I can get someone to love me if I behave properly, if I do it right, if I do this. Let go of that one. I can't get someone to love me. See, in your mind, you may say, maybe somebody will love me, but I can't make them love me. You drop through that hole. This is where we mature. This is where we become much stronger beings, when we let go of that which we hold so firmly. I want to be honest. Let that go. I want to be real. Let that go. Little by little, you challenge yourself, and you find that all of these things are somewhat illusory. Now, the goal for those interested in viewing double binds in a more advantageous way is to first recognize the role of perception in perceiving the double bind. Even if a situation is determined to be a double bind, it can be reframed. Just present both. I am hurting you because I love you. Or, I am hurting you and I love you. Not so confusing to accept both. But it's very confusing to accept the first one. Another strategy is to be completely present in the situation, letting go of the past that resembles this. This is the tough one. In a lot of double bind, situations are repeated, just like they were in childhood. So very often you don't know it. The thing you're doing today is a very reenactment of a thing that took place when you were younger. So you may want to deal with today, but the thing that stops you from dealing with today is that you have this reenactment of an earlier scene as a kid. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. The thing we're doing here is we're doing in our series of 12 programs now, Lisa?
This is the 12th
program. a series on education for therapists. We're presenting a couple of concepts at a time. Now, if I had a class of students at this point, we would be opening this up shortly for discussion. There'll be a lot of discussion in here, but here would be the question. You see, if I had students, I would have not people getting on who would be preaching about what's right. I would have students who would talk about where they find themselves caught in these traps. How would you like to be a student? How would you like to be part of that? See, we have students here. But if you would like to be a part of this, you would call us up right after our break today. You call us up at 212-209-2900, and we'll take your calls and we'll talk to you, and you could be part of our learning class, which we will continue. And we throw it at you, I think, maybe once a week. We'll throw one of the classes, and then we'll do other new things in the rest of the time. This is Armand DeMille with you, Lisa Arnone, Gianna Valerio, The Positive Mind, WBAI. Back to the idea of the buddy. I want to finish it up. We've been asked by the managers of WBAI to remind you of the importance of this. Now, one friend of mine does it with a few other places. It's a very simple thing. You know, if you leave your credit card on file, they give you $10. They take out $10 a month. We don't need very much. You know, we have if all of our listeners would join, we would never have to do a fund drive. And it would be, just imagine, you're paying for classes like this at $10 a month, which would mean $2.50 a week. Or if you break it down by the 1 3/4 times a month that I'm with you, that comes to 97.2 cents per program. I kid with you. When we were kids, we always made up statistics. We used to love to make up statistics. Did you ever make up statistics? One out of every 47 people die from... Oh, I remember what it was. The teacher said skiing is pathological. It was a psychology class. He said skiing is a form of attempted suicide. That was a pretty stupid thing, just because he didn't ski, to say. And I remember, I said, wait, only one in every 4,700 people who have skied have had accidents to the point of near fatality. And I don't know, he got away with it. I got away with it. I got away with that statistic. So I started making up statistics. Would you like to make up statistics? You could do it. You just say one out of every 50. You sound like you'd become somebody at one of the convention centers. You know, you could just make up statistics. Marilyn Ferguson, who was the head of the Aquarian Conspiracy, used to have shirts that she had us all wear. There was a group of us scientists who would meet once a year, and the T-shirt said MSU on the back. And what that stood for is, for all the scientists, this meant the best biologists, the best psychologists, the best MSU, right? That was the name of our university. And it means make stuff up. See, that's what the most creative people do. That's what the most scientific people do. They make stuff up. It's not what you know, it's what you're going to make up that makes it really worthwhile. We'll be back with you in a short while. In the meanwhile, perhaps you could start calling the station or going to the website and trying to find a way that you could join the buddy system. And when we come back from our break, I'll play you a little music. Oh, special new music. This is for Red Classic de Sevilla. I want to play a special piece by one of the people who are one of our listeners and supporters. Beautiful work. We will be also with you today and tomorrow. And again, taking your calls at 212-209-2900. We're going to be right back with you in just a little bit. We'll be right back.
I shall not. despertaba y escuché algo precioso.
Saga de Sevilla, I guess you could look up de Sevilla music, D-E, capital S-I-V-I-L-L-A music. It's not published. I just noticed that the album was dedicated to her beloved parent, whose name was Armando, of all things, Florindez. What a coincidence. Well, maybe not. Hey, Saga, wherever you are, that's beautiful stuff you're doing there. Thanks a lot for giving it to us. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. So just one last thought. Here's my idea about the buddy system, because I hope I never have to talk about this again. I don't like the word buddy system. It's too male. It's too buddy-buddy. You call your dog. And I like better than that monthly donor. A monthly donor for which you could now have the initials MD. And then we at BAI could address all our mail to you as Jane Smith, MD, right? Monthly donor. And you'd get all this mail that would have MD on it. I think that's a much better idea. Would somebody convince the management at BAI? So become an MD, or what they want to call a buddy. Hey, we're with you with the Positive Mind. I just made that up. There you go, making stuff up. So your question was the following, Lisa. You asked about that.
Well, when you were working your way back to talking about making stuff up, I started to think about magical thinking and that there's a relationship between those.
Yes, yes, there is imagination.
Yeah.
Imagination is important, and imagination can turn to fantasy, and fantasy can turn to creativity. So there's a certain part of magical thinking which leads to imagination, which leads to creativity. And then, of course, there's making stuff up, which is about making up things that are not true as if they are true.
Right. One is about, I guess, finding your way out of a corner or dark space, and one is, the other is more about playing with the ideas that you have in your mind about the world.
Good idea. Good. I mean, paranoia is magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paranoia is just as saying, I know he loves me, even though I've never met him. I mean, how many times do you meet somebody who's got a relationship with somebody who's on the other side of the world, and we only talk once a month on the phone, and no, we've never had sex, but what I know it's by true love.
I think the falling in love is requires a lot of magical thinking.
Yes, it
and
does.
And surrender.
Yes, it does. Well, not so sure about surrender.
With surrender.
I would go with creativity. I would say it takes, you got to make up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. You have to believe, you have to let go.
You have to grab on. I don't know if it's let go. You're going to go with surrender and let go.
We come as different.
Yeah, I'm just saying I think it's much more purposeful.
Yeah, creative.
It's much more purposeful, much more aggressive. That falling in love is not something you just lay back and you're on a cloud. I think you suck the cloud. You know, you grab it, you hold on to it. I think falling in love is a very zealous action.
Do you think...
Hey, that's a, nobody's ever said that.
Yeah, that's a good one. Do you think that it requires what you talked about earlier, this idea of not knowing, not being able to predict what will happen next, not knowing that you're going to make something happen?
Oh, no. I think falling in love is a prediction.
You have.
Sure, that's why I think most falling in love isn't real. You see, I think it's making a prediction. I think it's predicting stuff that you know is not real. It's fantasy, mostly. And we could get by without it. We don't need to fall in love. We don't need to fall at all. We could actually walk up the steps. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls.
Not yet.
Okay, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hey, here's an interesting piece of information. Obsessive compulsive order, disorder, is something that could alleviate post-traumatic stress disorder. So let's say people have a trauma. And then what all people do, remember, when people feel that they're very weak, they will, as all animals under stress, try to organize. Keep this rule in your mind. Whenever you see anybody organizing like crazy, you know they're under stress. And this is one of the ways that all animals deal with stress, is they organize. They try to chase their tails. They try to build a nest. They try to do something compulsively. But they found that obsessive compulsive disorder can follow a trauma, but then they also found that as a result of the obsessive compulsive disorder, a trauma is created. So look at this cycle. Look at this cycle. A cycle of you have a trauma, you organize, you over-organize, and another trauma is created. It's quite a loop. Very difficult to interrupt. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I love your show.
Hi, Jeff.
It's very interesting what you were just saying about, you know, creating a trauma based on trying to organize. It's something that I had struggled with a lot. I was I'm a survivor of physical abuse and abuse in the family, and I noticed that you know, I went to college, I got my master's degree from NYU, and I think this like sort of compulsory thinking about things has been something that, you know, I think it's a real defense mechanism that we try to cover up this whole letting go.
You figure things out, Jeff? Is that what you do? You're going to figure it out? Is that how you spent your life, figuring it out?
Always, I guess always trying to, because I guess with my particular situation, it was like always walking on eggshells and trying to predict, you know, what not to do,
yes. Very important, well, Jeff. Stick with me a sec. That's very important. Trying to predict what not to do. Listen to these words. These are beautiful words that Jeff is saying. I was trying to predict not what to do or what to not do. And Jeff, I'm just going to stay with me because it reminds me of another thing that somebody once told me. He told me about his mother saying to him, "Why don't you love me?" And he said, "I couldn't figure that out. Because if you said, why do you love me, I may have an answer. But why don't you love me, I didn't have an answer. Because she was asking me to explain the absence of a feeling. Now, if she's saying, why are you angry with me, I could give her an answer. But why don't you love me is another double-binding question. Because how could you possibly answer that? So here you are, Jeff, working your way through. Tell me what happens to you.
I've been in therapy for about a year and have been actually been really benefiting from it. Just learning how to surrender and just kind of surrender in relationships with peers and especially with coworkers. I thought I came from a really academic background and now I work in a very non-academic background. So learning how to kind of let go and deal with whole bunch of different personality types has been really helpful.
That's kind of a beautiful thing. What kind of non-intellectual environment do you work in? Sounds like you work in radio. No, I'm only kidding.
Funny. No, I worked at. I actually work for an Apple store. So it's technology. There's a lot of thinking involved. But there's so many different types of people, and that are not necessarily, definitely do not have the same background. So it's just a very...
You want a very interesting thing, Jeff? Did you ever look at the Enneagram?
No. You may
have heard me talk about Enneagram, Enneagram.
Okay.
The Enneagram, which is a Sufi system of knowledge, which is, if I had another 9 classes to teach, we may have to do this one at a time on the air one day, because I know I've done it before, but maybe we'll just do it systematically. In the Enneagram, the Sufis tried to determine the 9 different types of people. One of the types that they chose is the 5. And the 5 is the hobbyist, kind of an inward person, a non-intellectual but very smart person. I think they all work at the Apple store.
Yeah.
I think all the 5s work at the Apple store. This is not putting them down. This is like, that's a gathering place. Because what you have is a social kind of distance automatically, and at the same time, a kind of inner genius. So you might learn a lot from that just by looking it up. There's a book called The Wisdom of the Enneagram, or you can even look it up online, but keep this number 5 in your mind.
Okay.
It's an interesting thing. But Jeff, you seem to be on a good journey for yourself. What about your love life?
Looking for a nice Jewish girl. I just came back from Israel on a trip, so if that's the place to go to get one, I don't know.
It didn't work out too well?
It was great. No, it was a great trip, but I don't know. I guess it's something that I don't feel I'm just kind of not ready for just yet in my life. I mean, I guess I'm ready, but just financially with the economy, it just is. Are very rough, and just waiting to kind of be a little bit more secure before I take that step. But then, who knows? You can never prepare, I guess, enough.
So well, actually, you can only unprepare. You can only unprepare, but what I hear is your mother has a big influence in your life right now.
Sure.
Yeah, I hear, of course. Of course, and so you've got to have,
influence.
You've got to keep her happy at the same time as you're living your own life.
That's, I guess you can definitely say that that's true. It's something I don't want to be doing, but...
I know.
I want to feel like I have that obligation, but also just looking for a better employment situation.
Well, you see, it kind of goes together. It kind of goes together. It's like this bind that you're caught in, which is loving your mother, feeling alienated from your father somewhat, caring about your mother on one hand and her caring about you a great deal, wanting to please her even by the mate that you choose, wanting to choose a nice Jewish girl that she'd be happy with. All of this is the kind of bind that people get caught in. And it's like it's a problem. And now comes this interesting idea. What if this bind didn't exist? What if you were absolutely not responsible for your mother's well-being on any level? Not that you, I'm saying you are not, but what if you let that completely drop away right down through the floors of the Apple store, you know? And then what would happen? Then what would be left? And what kind of Jeff would we have? And then while Jeff is doing this, maybe some nice Italian young woman will pass by and wink at you.
I'm half Italian, you know.
I could hear it. I could hear it in your voice.
The Lucas Dean, I call myself.
Jeff, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Miller. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Armand?
Yes.
How you doing? This is Burpo Reimers, just for the disclaimer, the general manager of the station. How you doing?
You're the what of the station?
The general manager.
Oh, you're the general manager.
Bertold, how you doing?
Oh, Bertold, nice to hear you. I could barely hear your voice.
Listen, I appreciate you promoting the BI buddy. And we did come up with the name after discussing with a few people. So I'd like to discuss the name with you a little bit. Some people call it Circle of Friends or, you know, sponsors of the station. But I felt that the BAI Buddy, where you can go to WBAI.org to get access to sign in, was a pretty nice, friendly way to get people to feel that they're part of the WBAI family.
Good. Good. I like monthly donor, too. I was just saying monthly donor is a very good idea because then we could give them all MDs. See, then everybody would have an MD at the end of their name. But good, Bertold.
Yeah, I thought when you said monthly donor, you meant major donor. So what's in the BAI buddy, as far as the buddy part? What, if you were doing an analysis of that, how would you go about that and see why he was chosen, for example?
Sure. I'll be involved in that with you at any time.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling in. What did you say?
What? Yes.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille supporting all that is.
Okay, go.
Let's take a call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, my name is Mana.
Mana, hi. I need you to speak a little louder.
Okay.
There you are.
Sorry, I'm calling because I find myself in that double spine situation often, in both positions, putting my boyfriend in the situation, you know, I'm a jealous person, and putting him in that no-win situation, and then I myself am constantly in that no-win situation with my own family.
Explain that to me. First of all, Lana, you know, I'm a jealous person. That's a good word. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what color is that.
What color it is?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a pink person, I'm a yellow person, I'm a jealous person. What does that mean? Does that mean
that? That's a feeling that I can identify, that I
Yeah, you frequently
lot.
Have. You've had that all your life?
Yes.
You've had it as a little girl?
Less so.
Did you have a sister?
Less jealous, though.
Did you have a sister?
No, only child.
You're the only child, so your jealousy as a child, where would that appear?
I couldn't really tell you. It's just that when I become an adult and I'm able to put my finger on the feeling I feel, jealousy is a frequent feeling.
Yeah, you get angry at people who are stepping on your territory?
Get angry sometimes and not even stepping on my territory. It's more of a reaction to being in a long distance relationship.
Oh, are you in a long distance relationship?
Yes, I am.
That's very difficult. Why'd you choose that?
Well, I had met the person in law school. We were together and
uh-huh.
we our bars in different states, so we're in a position of being separate, trying to get together.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's a very tough one, Lana, because, you know, it means a lot of insecurity, and to choose to have a long-distance relationship is to choose ones that you either going to go with a lot of solidness, you know, but to do it and to have this kind of doubt running through your mind is a very, very difficult way to be with somebody.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, very difficult. So you get jealous of what he does with his time?
I just get jealous of other people being able to spend every day with him.
I understand. Well,
I feel like I put him in the double bind situation where I say, you know, I'm jealous of you going out with your friends, and I'm angry that you're not jealous of me going out with my friends.
Right.
And somehow that means that I'm more invested in what you're doing.
Yes, it sounds like you're a little crazier than he is. That's what it sounds like. Or he doesn't care as much as you do, which is another way that you would look at it.
Right, exactly.
I know. Very, very difficult situation, Lana. I would say that underneath this lays some other insecurities, and that it's probably not something that we're going to tap into too easily this way, because there's a lot of insecurity that would lead you in this situation. And it's very painful to live with. Very, very painful. I mean, I know from what you're saying on the air, you can talk about it factually, but I know the tears of rage that you live with internally. And nobody would really understand it. Nobody would really see it. Mm-hmm. You know? And if they did, they might even feel responsible, which would be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I think, Lana, is that you should have a hand with this. You should have somebody like Lisa here or somebody like that to lend you a hand with it, to help you with it, because going mm-hmm. through it alone is very tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, as far as long-distance relationships go, you know, I think that the difficulty is unavoidable, and it's a matter of trying to, you know, overcome it and work through it until you can be together, but...
Well, let's look at it the Buddhist way. Here we go again. Maybe it's the very best way to love. Because this way you've got this separateness. You've got this thing about, you know, I love you, but I can't be with you. And therefore, what do I have left? And what do I have? And here becomes the koan that you have to answer over time. Very difficult to live with. Again, I say get some help with it, Lana, because I suspect that underneath it, there's even more anxiety than you could possibly share with us
mm-hmm.
right now. Hey, I have to be going. I appreciate your telephone call. This mm-hmm. is Armand Hill.
Once Thanks again, for the advice. Yeah.
My pleasure, Lana. Hey, you can go to WBAI.org and hear a replay of the show today, or you can go to our website, thepositivemind.org. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. here on WBAI. Remember, go back on the website, WBAI.org, and hunt up that buddy system and become an MD.
Controversy that I'm coming, but nonetheless.
That is what it is. Become a WBAI buddy, a buddy, among other things, makes you feel wanted and appreciated. And we'll always be there for you, and that's what we want you to do, to be there for WBAI. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring donation to WBAI, either using a credit or debit card or by electronic funds transfer from your bank account. It's safe, it's secure, and it's easy. If you go to our website, WBAI.org, you'll find out more about how to become a WBAI buddy. This is Evan Thompson. That's Evans with an S on the end. Evans Thompson and True Story. An artist that I've had here on these airwaves before, and I certainly want to promote Evan's work. Evan's going to be, where is Evan's going to be? Somewhere in October, he is going to be here on the Lower East Side, and at the Stone in October, and I will attend Evan's if I possibly can. Evans Thompson and True Story.
Ready for me?
I'm ready for you.
Hi, my name is Angelique Kidjo. When I'm in New York, I always have my radio tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI. Maybe phone Gandia. Angelique Kidjo, hold on me. New York.